First, we just came out of a series of food-heavy holidays. A lot of eating, a lot of time spent cooking along the way. Maybe too much time. I grew up watching the Jetsons cartoon. Among the flying cars and robot house cleaners, one of the technological inventions in the futuristic setting was the food pill. The family would gather around the dinner table, take their dinner pills. Today in real life, no flying cars, robot vacuums, but no robo-maids, and the food pill, an inventor is having a go at something like that with the strangely titled Soylent nutritional product. So here's our thing for today. If we could opt out of cooking and eating and all the time it takes, would we? You can call in now and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Nicola Twilley joins us now. She wrote a piece on this subject for Eon Magazine. We've got that linked on the Central Time Facebook page. She's the author of the blog Edible Geography, co-host of the Gastropod podcast, and a contributing writer at NewYorker.com. Nicola, Happy New Year and welcome to the show.
Happy New Year to you too, and thanks for having me.
Now, this is a story about food, but it's also spurred by time. Set the stage for us, how our busy lives run up against the necessities of food preparation and the time it takes.
Well, yes. Yeah. So the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, you'll be glad to hear, has actually put a, they've quantified this. They say that on average, Americans spend 90 minutes a day on food. Now, that's an averaged out figure. It includes grocery shopping, food prep, eating it, cleanup afterwards, that whole thing. But 90 minutes a day, it's kind of a lot when you think about it.
So enter Soylent. What are the origins of this would-be food replacement product?
Well, so the original Soylent, as many of your listeners will know, is, it's a name borrowed from a movie. Actually, originally from a science fiction novel where it just referred to soy lentil burgers. And then from the movie where I think everyone knows it is people. But this version of Soylent is not people, at least I hope not. It was the brainchild of a Silicon Valley computer programmer called Rob Reinhart. He's 25 years old. And actually, it was pretty much this time 2 years ago. He had just come off a December of eating really badly, was fed up with it, and just wondered, how Silicon Valley is, they can optimize everything. So his thinking was, why can't I optimize food? So he came up with this nutritionally complete liquid food substitute, lived on it for the month of January 2013. In February, he wrote a post about it saying, I feel like the $6 million man. I've never felt so great in my life. And it became a hit. So a lot on the website Hacker News and a lot of techies jumped on this story, asked that he share the recipe, which he did, and then a whole DIY community got set up. And then because of that, he saw the popularity, and he, Rob just quit his programming job and founded a company to supply Soylent to the masses.
And part of the reasoning here was he wanted to save that 90 minutes a day, right?
That's right. Yeah, he's a very optimized sort of individual. He doesn't do laundry. He puts his clothes in the freezer and then buys new clothes when that stops working. I mean, he's just a person who has decided that, life is short. There are many things that he wants to be doing, and food is not important to him. So.
And now he himself described his initial product as, I'm quoting from your article here, thick, odorless beige liquid. Sounds yummy. You tried it. What was it like?
Oh, God, this is the worst week of my life. I was living on this. So it comes in, there's a pouch of powder and then sort of like a travel shampoo bottle size of the oil component and a plastic jug. So you dump the powder in, you dump the oil in, and then you fill to the top of the jug with water, and then you give it a good shake, and then you put it in the fridge overnight. The fridge part is just because if it's cold, you can taste it less. So unfortunately, it also settles out, so then you have to give it another shake in the morning. But if you have a delicate stomach, fragile first thing in the morning, and you're looking at this thing, what it's done is separated out into this sort of sludge at the bottom, an oily layer, a watery layer, and then this sort of scum-like, sort of bubbly top. So really a nice start to the day. And the idea is that you just, that jug full is all you would need for the day. So you just pour yourself a glass whenever you want. I mean, the main problem I had with it is the texture. It's very gritty and not in a good way. I'm not sure that gritty can ever be a good thing, but I found that drinking it through a straw really helped. The other thing is it's just very, it's sweet, sort of very fake vanilla-y. It wasn't my cup of tea.
Okay, so this wasn't a great culinary experience, but did you save time when you did this experiment trying it, and did you make good use? Did you optimize that time?
Yes. Yeah, so I did have lots of extra time. In fact, the day stretched out in front of me and I realized how much I count on food to just, you know, give me something to think about. And that stretch between breakfast and lunch, where you're thinking about what you're going to have for lunch. And then that stretch between, anyway, so maybe this says more about my life than it does about Soylent, but I found that really it just, I had more, you know, there was a lot more mental energy, there was a lot more time, and yet I found that I couldn't really do very much more with it because I was sort of hungry and sort of depressed and sort of bored, and there wasn't anything to, I mean, let me tell you, I watched my first ever cat video on YouTube that week.
Wow.
That's how low it got. So,
and before we move on to some of the wider implications of all this, what is this stuff made out of?
Yeah, so I mean, it's supposed to be nutritionally complete. So it has a long ingredient list of, you know, proteins and fish oils, and they actually have they made it vegetarian now, so the omega-3s are coming from a plant-based oil now, I think. But yes, you know, there's vitamins, minerals, carbohydrate. I mean, it's basically, you know, he's taken the USDA recommendations for a healthy diet and found them all in powder form.
Now, this sounds like a huge radical step in some ways, getting rid of food, replacing it with other stuff. But you point out in your piece that it's maybe the next step in a long trend. We've been talking about this time versus food trade-off when we look at things like home-cooked meals versus convenient food or fast food. This has been going on for some generations now.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, the food industry is sort of being trumpeting this time-saving mantra for convenience foods throughout the 20th century. I mean, there's an amazing quote from the head of the U.S. Grocery Manufacturers Association in the 60s saying, oh, we've managed to save the average housewife 4 hours a day just through convenience foods. And he goes on to say, this is time that she can use to invest in bridge, canasta, garden club, all those nice things that women do. Of course, actually, what she probably did do is go out to work. Mm-hmm. But yes, that sort of time-saving mantra and the idea that you can't afford to take the time on food is definitely something that we've heard before.
And there's a guilt level too here. You talk about everything from, you know, those 60s American families to more recent Mexican moms who are buying tortillas instead of making their own. We're wondering, is this trade-off of the freshly made with love thing that we made at home, is it worth the time to do that versus maybe this inferior product that took us minutes to buy?
Right. And I don't want to, this is important. I don't want to sort of overlook the importance of even having the choice. Mm-hmm. So those Mexican women, before there were factory-made tortillas, were on their knees grinding corn for 5 hours a day. Having the choice to make a trade-off and buy an inferior product so that you can go out to work and you can support your family, that choice is a very, very valuable choice to have. So I definitely, you know, convenience has brought us great things. And I'm really glad I don't have to grind corn for 5 hours a day. There's also, yeah, it's really hard on your knees. So there's also the question of mental effort as well. I think for a lot of people, the planning and the dealing with your entire family? Do they all want to eat the same thing? You can't eat the same thing as last night. That thing, that is really a problem.
We are talking to Nicola Twilley, talking about food, whether we'd be happier without all the fuss of cooking and preparing meals, whether we'd do without it if we had an acceptable substitute, something like a food replacement pill or a powder like this Soylent product we've been talking about. How about you? Is food sometimes just too much of a hassle, too much of a time-sucking vortex in your life? Would you be just as happy if you could do without it, just take a food supplement a few times a day? Call in. Love to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over at the Central Time Facebook page. Nicola Twilley stays with us. She blogs at Edible Geography and co-hosts the Gastropod podcast. She wrote a piece in Eon magazine about efforts to replace food and cooking with high-tech food replacement products, one called Soylent in particular. The idea is we could save a lot of time and hassle along the way. She asks the question, would we opt out of food if we could? And I'm asking you that question right now. Would you be just as happy to skip the food for some or all meals if there was a healthy food replacement available in maybe a pill or powder form? Is food and cooking worth the time it takes, or would you trade that food to have more time available? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post at the Central Time Facebook page. We've got Eli on the line in Abrams now. Eli, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
You know, it sounds pretty good. My only concern is the pill or the liquid form of eating, is that going to be substantial? Is it going to have the right balance? Is it like one for all, if it's everybody? Or, you know, are there going to be different pills per everybody's different, metabolism balance of food?
Oh, interesting, Eli. Thanks a lot for that call. Nicola, in looking at this, does it seem like the goal is a one-size-fits-all food product, or is there going to have to be something different for everybody?
That's a great question, actually. And there's a whole world of DIY Soylenters out there who are actually just going ahead and tweaking Rob's recipe, which he made open source. So you could buy the Soylent, the prepackaged Soylent from him if you're looking for just, you know, the convenience factor. But if you're really interested in tweaking this for what you think is right for your body or for what you know you need, his recipe's online and you could tweak it. There are very, very active forums online of people saying, experimenting, what happens if you put in a little more chromium? What happens if you take out a little of the zinc? You know, those kinds of things. So it is kind of intriguing. I mean, Rob played around a lot with his own body's needs and the results of putting in too much of one thing and too little of the other. And you start realizing how what you put into your body really affects it.
Nicola, when you tried this product as the inventor, Rob had designed it, did you feel, I mean, obviously not satisfied in a culinary sense, it sounds like, but did you feel hungry all the time, or did you feel like satisfied from drinking this stuff?
Well, so I actually lost a ton of weight, which was not even the goal, although, you know, always a bonus. But I was trying it in the summer, so, you know, bikini season, it helped. But that was partly just because I got so bored. The thought of having another glass of this stuff for dinner after I'd already had a glass of it for lunch and breakfast, I just couldn't be bothered. It just didn't even sound fun. So that has something to be said for it. I would say that it does fill you up. So when I went to the gym, I went to my regular kickboxing class, and I would have a glass of this afterwards, and I was full. I just wasn't satiated in the sense that I felt like I had had a meal. I just wasn't hungry anymore.
We heard from Lisa on Facebook. She writes, I could never opt out of food. Food, in my opinion, she says, has significance beyond mere nourishment in the lives of humans. Food is culture, it's communion, it's art and science, it's comfort and adventure. I could see certain applications of a nutrient-loaded food replacement powder or pill, but I can't see it ever fully replacing food. So food is culture, communion, art, and science in our lives, Nicola.
I'm with her. Now, even Rob Reinhardt, the inventor, does still make time for what he calls recreational eating. So he lives on 90% Soylent, and 10% of his diet is a meal with friends. So he'll have about maybe, you know, one dinner a week with friends, maybe a, you know, maybe a breakfast and a dinner, something like that. So he still recognizes the value.
Nicola, are you still there? We've lost connection briefly with our guest, Nicola Twilley, talking about food, whether we could do it out in our lives. She looked in particular at a product in development still called Soylent. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you could replace food in your life, would you? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also join our listeners who have already posted over at the Central Time Facebook page. This is based on an essay by our guest in Eon Magazine, looking at the implications of what it would mean to do without food in our lives. If we could replace it with a pill or a powder, Jetson-style dinners in pill form. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Nicola, do we have you back?
We do.
Great. Oh, good. I'm glad you're back with us. So we were just talking about food as culture. And let's get back to our callers now. We've got Jason on the line in Green Bay. Jason, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. A great topic. I found it interesting. And my point is I'm a former Army Ranger from the first Gulf War. When we are out in the field, you know, we have MREs. We have to do the best we can with an MRE. They give you a little hot sauce in there. You make the best of what you have. But when you are without food and you are in the field as a soldier or in any implication, we have been trained to deal without food. You don't think about it. You push on, you drive on. I thought that would be an interesting little additive to your story.
Jason, thanks a lot for the call. Surviving on those MREs, meals ready to eat, I believe it stands for. And I wonder, Nicola, going without food, going only with this sort of unappetizing stuff, did it make you appreciate other aspects of your life more or maybe less?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think I definitely appreciated food more once I had it afterwards. When I gave up on day four and made myself a real New York bagel with I had really good cheese, some salt. It was, yeah, my hand shook. I've never had such a good meal, and I've had some good meals, but not eating for 4 days, I tell you what, it makes that next meal taste amazing. I'm sure Jason would probably agree with that from his time in the field.
Jason, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go now to Kara in Heartland. Kara, hi.
Hi. I never realized the importance of just eating. I'm agreeing with your online or your social media page person, mm-hmm. because my mother-in-law had cancer in her jaw and had to have part of it removed and can't eat like the rest of us eat. And it's really difficult. You know, everything we do revolves around eating, all of our social times and it's really, you don't realize how central it is to the way we function until you are with somebody who can't.
Kara, thanks so much. That's really interesting, Nicola. I mean, when you think about it, I guess we have evolved as humans and before humans with eating as a central part of our existence. That's bound to have some kind of like psychological something if we don't do it anymore.
Yeah, but you know what is interesting, though, in writing this story is a lot of people say, oh, well, what if we lose mealtimes? Mealtimes are so important. That's how we, you know, connect with our families and our friends. And actually, the mealtime turns out to be a very recent invention. There's a historian called Abby Carroll did some work on this amazing book called Three Squares. And basically, the mealtime as we know it, the three-meal structure, is only about 150 years old. And it's a response to the Industrial Revolution and the needs of capitalism. So meals that seem like this very important thing that we should, you know, that are just, it's so important to civilization, actually, you know, go back 300 years and our ancestors wouldn't have thought so.
So they just ate when they had the food to eat and the time to eat it.
Exactly. And there wasn't a big deal about eating together as a family. In fact, you know, most families wouldn't have had enough implements for everyone to eat at the same time. So it was really, you know, catch as catch can back then.
Go back to our callers now with Alex in Madison. Alex, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm very interested in the use of Soylent in combating world hunger because, you know, we have a lot of issues, you know, Africa, Southeast Asia, where, you know, almost I think it's like a sixth of the world doesn't have enough to eat. And this is a real, real cool solution, something that's very cheap and easy to ship and get to these areas. I'd really be interested to see how this sort of a product could help solve hunger in these areas, even if just as a short-term fix.
Interesting. Thanks for that call, Alex. Nicola, is this one of the goals of the adventure or maybe his boosters of this Soylent product?
No, he's very interested, actually. You're completely right. He really does see this as something that, particularly maybe in a short-term situation with a natural disaster or something, something that could be very useful. And there are some downsides to that. You have to mix it with water. Clean water is often not particularly available in a natural disaster situation. So that could be a problem. I mean, we already have foods that are very high in energy that we can give to, say, malnourished children. I don't know if you've heard of Plumpy Nut. It's a peanut-based paste that is the kind of thing that we fly into disaster zones. So I think that the water thing is sort of a problem, but it definitely has potential.
Well, Nicola, bringing it back home just in an everyday life situation, if we could have a product like this that was appetizing, that was satisfying, how would you integrate it in your life? Not at all? Replace food completely or mix and match a little bit?
Well, so I probably wouldn't use it at all. I mean, there's some things that I think are really important about food. Food to me is much more about how we relate to the world around us. I mean, it is our primary way of negotiating our relationship to the environment. Soylent seems like it comes out of nowhere, but actually it's coming, you know, the vitamin D2 is coming from a factory in China. I would rather know where my food, the nutrients I'm putting in my body are coming from. The other problem that I had with it is I don't feel like we know enough about nutrition to reverse engineer it.
Nicola, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That's Nicola Twilley. She's author of the blog Edible Geography, co-host of the Gastropod podcast. She's working on a book on refrigeration, too. Maybe we'll talk to her about that down the road.